the What Bitcoin Did podcast.
Hi there, how are you all? Welcome to the What Bitcoin Did podcast. Today I have an interview with Samson Mao and Catherine Wu where we discuss the proposed Bitmain IPO. And also quite interestingly today, CoinDesk reported that investors had received pitch decks falsely suggesting the company had secured financial backing from Digital Sky Technologies Global and GIC Private Limited. I've included a link to that article in the show notes as there are possible legal implications for Bitmain should this be true. So that's worth having a read of. I wanted to record this episode as I read through the prospectus and a whole bunch of the commentary from various analysts and different articles on Medium and posts on Twitter, and there were a number of things that I felt were worthy of discussing, specifically the H1 figures for 2018, which were kind of concealing quite a significant loss for Q2, the level of Bitcoin cash that is on the balance sheet and how that's been accounted for, the innovation and competition, or arguably lack of innovation, and how Bitmain are potentially falling behind some of their competitors, and some of the misrepresentations to investors. So links to all the documents and all the articles I've read are in the show notes. They're worth taking a good look through. If you have any questions, always feel free to reach out to me. My email address is hello@whatbitcoindid.com. And just a note, there was a slight issue with the recording. I was recording it remotely and one of the sound files has some slight issues. So at some points it might sound a little bit weird as I try to merge them, but I've done my best to clean that up. Okay, this one is for my US listeners. Let's talk about stamps.com, your 24-hour a day, 7-day a week postage service. And as you know, you can practically get anything on demand right now, even my podcast. You can listen to this whenever you want. It comes out on a Friday, but if you want to listen to it next week, in a few weeks, you can do that. You can do it whenever it's convenient for you. And did you know you can also get postage on demand at your convenience whenever it suits you? Yes, with stamps.com, you can access all the services of the post office right from your desk. You can buy and print real US postage for any letter or any package, and it is available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You just go to the website, click print mail, and you are done. And stamps.com, they want to make this easy for you. They will even send you a digital scale. You can weigh your letters and packages and print the exact amount of postage every time. I wish we had this in the UK. I send out a lot of packages, especially when I'm getting rid of old stuff on eBay, and each time I have to go down to the post office, usually in the cold and wet because we're in England. So this is definitely something I would use. So listen, why don't you go and check out stamps.com? They have a special offer for you right now. It's a 4-week trial which includes postage and a digital scale. So don't wait, go to stamps.com before you do anything else and just click on the radio microphone in the top right-hand corner of the homepage and then type in Bitcoin. That's stamps.com, enter Bitcoin. If you want to support the show, there's a whole bunch of things you can do. You can head over to my Patreon page, which is patreon.com/whatbitcoindid. I'm now at 25 patrons, which is super cool. This really does help with financing the show, especially as I'm now doing 2 interviews a week. You can become a show sponsor if you're interested in that. Please feel free to email me on hello@whatbitcoindid.com. As I said before, downloads are growing pretty fast, so that's pretty cool. You can leave me a review on iTunes and you can also subscribe. Apparently if you click the subscribe button, that's good for me. But if you want to leave me a review on iTunes, you think I deserve 5-star, I would obviously be very grateful. So thank you for doing that. You can follow me on social media. I'm on Twitter, I'm on Instagram, I'm on Medium. My handle is @whatbitcoindid on pretty much everything. And if you reach out to me, I'll probably have a chat with you. You can check out my website. I've been doing lots and lots of work on that recently to make it really helpful. Also on there, I've now put a section for transcriptions. So I've transcribed, I think, 8 of the last interviews. I'm now going to go through all the old ones and get them all up there. But if you want the transcriptions for any of the interviews, they are up there too. You can sign up to my newsletter. I've launched a daily Bitcoin newsletter. I'm just playing around with it this week. I've done 2 now. I'm just trying to play out with the design and the format. And what I'm trying to do is there's loads of really cool crypto emails. I just thought it'd be good to do one that's solely focused on Bitcoin. It includes news, a little bit of commentary, any cool blog posts, and any other podcasts or things that are worth checking out. So yeah, you can subscribe to that on my website. There's a subscribe button. I will value any feedback on that. If you think it's useful, give me a shout, or you think I can do any better, I'd obviously appreciate any feedback. And lastly, you can share out the show with your friends and family. Obviously, I see it every time a show is shared out, and that's really useful for me because it obviously increases the reach of the show, and I'm trying to make this a full-time job. I'm going to be heading out to the States this weekend. I'm probably going to be heading out to San Francisco on Sunday and then over to Vegas on Tuesday for World Crypto Con. I'll be going out there to just meet up with a few people and do some interviews. It's the anniversary, the 10-year anniversary of the release of the Bitcoin white paper, and that same day is also the 40th anniversary of my birth. Yes, I'm going to be 40, celebrating my birthday. If you're at World Crypto Con and you want to catch up, have a drink, meet up, have a talk, just give me a shout. And if you're in San Francisco on Sunday or Monday, you want to say hello, just give me a shout. Happy to meet up and chat with anyone. Okay, so on to the show. Hope you enjoy it. If you do have any questions, feel free to reach out to me. My email address is hello@whatbitcoindid.com. And yeah, look forward to hearing from you. Right, good evening, Samson. Good evening, Catherine. Well, it's evening here in London. I'm not sure what time it is. I know you're in New York, Catherine, so you're 5 hours behind. Where are you, Samson?
I'm on West Coast, Canada.
You're West Coast, Canada, so that's about 8 hours behind. Well, thank you for agreeing to come on and do this. I've been poring over the documents for the Bitmain IPO. I think it's a very interesting subject. I've started to get some of my opinions together, but I think it would be interesting just to start with, because I've been following both of you from the announcement, you've both been adding commentary and analysis. If you could both just tell me what your overriding thoughts are now, probably start with you first, Catherine.
So my analysis, I would say, is more of a summary. So what I did was pretty much summarize the application proof that Bitmain had filed to the Hong Kong Stock Exchange. Of course, this is just sort of like a preliminary filing. There's still a lot of figures and details that haven't been disclosed or figured out yet. But, you know, basically the big thing was just, you know, this was something that's been years in the works now. And I think to some extent satisfied some people's curiosities, and mostly, you know, they had, for example, like financial statements. Obviously, we always know that, like, you know, Bitmain's a huge company, it's impressive, but looking at the numbers is when you look at, actually have the figures in front of you, it's impressive, right? Like, you look at how much, you know, their revenue was, right? So first half of 2018, revenue was 2.8 billion USD, which, you know, is it's just staggering. And then you look at their size, you look at their plans, right? They've got just farms, not just in China, but also around the world, like three in the US, with plans to expand to Canada. You look at the size of their team, right? Bitmain's like over 2,000 person company, and just within that, like 840 of them are engineers. So, you know, I don't want to like spend too much time going into every single detail, but I think from a macro level, it was a really interesting read, because there's been a lot of intrigue around the company itself, and just seeing the numbers in front of me was definitely just a very, again, like, riveting read.
Yeah, so I've been following Bitmain pretty much since early 2015, because back then I was at BTC China, and they were a competitor for us, at least on the mining pool side, if not on the ASIC side. So having run a mining pool, we do deal with a lot of manufacturers, and we are familiar with a lot of people in the mining space, both running farms and doing the silicon. And I guess following the Bitmain IPO is just a natural extension of just following along with what Bitmain has been doing for the past few years. And I think my initial reaction was a bit of shock, because I knew that they weren't in a really good place. And it's kind of surprising that they would want to IPO at this time. And all the information that was coming to light was reconfirming all of the intel that I've had on what was going on inside. So I think it was an eye-opener for me and for everyone else in the space to watch this unfold in real time, and all the things kind of bubble to the surface, and the analyses that you can make when you actually have data. Because when you're going to IPO, it's all transparent. You're opening up the kimono and it's all out there.
And do we have any idea when the Q3 data will be out?
Well, we know that they filed at the end of September to kind of cut off the Q3 date. And I actually have a different thesis on their whole IPO strategy. I think that they don't actually want to IPO now, but they have no choice but to IPO, because they raised with the expectation that they would IPO. So they had to file, and it had to look good, or as good as they could possibly make it. But I don't actually think they really want to IPO in this market, and not with their current offerings and position and just overall health of the company. So when Q3, I don't know. They should probably submit again before the end of the year to the Hong Kong Stock Exchange. But I think Q3 is going to be worse than Q2. At least that's my guess.
Yeah, I think you might be right. So from my position, after kind of going through everything over the last couple of days in quite a bit of detail, it feels almost like the IPO is some kind of bailout, in that I was looking through the balance sheet, and obviously they have quite significant crypto holdings, though possibly over, well, not possibly, certainly overvalued, but they have very little cash for a company of 2,500 people. I think it was about 105 million in cash, yet they also have quite a bit of inventory that they're probably struggling to sell. It's almost like a perfect storm. They've got this huge cache of BCH for an illiquid market with no over-the-counter demand, a huge inventory of ASICs which are losing value whilst there are better products, competitor products on the market, and difficulties increasing. They're burning through capital trying to release new chips where they're not really having much success, and they've had a pretty unsuccessful attempt at moving into AI so far. It feels like a perfect storm, and what I'm trying to also then understand myself, and I'd love your opinion on this, both of you, is that it feels that Bitmain can't be successful without a successful growth in the price of Bitcoin, but Bitcoin can be successful without Bitmain. So if you were thinking of investing in the Bitmain OPO, would it be more astute to invest in Bitcoin itself?
Yeah, I mean, I think you raised some really good points, and there are kind of like two major concerns that I had, which was, number one, that they have really high like crypto holdings, right? I think like 28%. And secondly, and I think they disclosed this, but it's like, okay, we overordered, right, inventory wise for the year of 2018. And now they're stuck with a ton of just mining rigs or equipment that they probably aren't going to be able to sell. And on top of that, so the recent, and I think Samson, like, we can probably go into this later because I know you tweeted about this too, but the recent like US-China trade war with the tariffs uncertain terms will really kind of screw them over, especially because Bitmain's over 50% of Bitmain sales are international sales.
Sorry, I was just going to say, I've got it here. So is it the Trump tariffs are set at 27.6%?
Yeah, so basically what happened is, you know, given the whole trade war, there's been a reclassification of like hardware exporting to the US. And so Antminer S9s specifically has been recategorized, and so now they'll be facing a 27.6% tariff, up from basically zero previously. And that's important to note because the Antminer S9, at least in 2017, accounted for like over half of their revenue. And of course, this isn't just Bitmain specific, right? This is going to hit like basically any crypto mining producer that comes out of China exporting to the US. And I noted this earlier, but you know, over half of Bitmain sales do happen from international sales. I don't remember what the specific figure for the US is, but you know, they do have at least three farms in the US.
Won't that affect other miners in China as well?
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah,
definitely. But Bitmain has kind of plunked down a lot of commitment to build in the US, unlike the other guys.
I would want to also bring up one interesting point, and this was at least from my perspective, is that it seemed that just through the application proof, like Bitmain was really trying to kind of come out and be like, oh, like, look, like we're also an AI company, so we're not totally screwed like buying crypto. So just on a very high level, those were like the three observations/concerns that I had.
So they have 887,000 BCH based on the leaked decks, but the fun thing was in their prospectus, they hid that. They just buried that number. They just said they have 989 million in crypto. And they wrote down 102 million of it, but they still have 886 million in crypto holdings. And you just have no idea what that's in or how it's valued, because they're also valuing their crypto at the time they acquired it. So basically, it's not going down. So that's very scary, I think, from the perspective of any prospective investor, just or any educated prospective investor, just not knowing how much they actually have and what they're valuing it at.
So it's interesting you say that, because I was reading through the prospectus and I wrote down the quote for that from it. It was hidden like page 350, and it says, "The group accounts for cryptocurrencies at cost instead of revaluing cryptocurrencies at their fair value on each accounting reference date, because the latter model is subject to inherent and substantial volatility in the value of cryptocurrencies from time to time. In addition, the group believes the cost model better reflects the group's business mode, as the group does not trade in cryptocurrencies but earns cryptocurrencies from the sale of mining hardware, proprietary mining operational of mining pooling service." So I found that was also disingenuous, Samson, because I think I know they've changed the model now, but if you were forcing people to buy the equipment in BCH, you are essentially trading BCH.
Yeah, and even the illiquidity is not fully explained well enough. I mean, you could value it at the time you acquired it, but it's not a very liquid market. And we still don't really have a standardized way to evaluate the liquidity of any crypto asset, not at least industry-wide. We can do estimates based on market depth and the like, but it's unlikely that you'd be able to offload almost a million BCH on the market right now without tanking it to zero. The other part of your question is, would people be better off just buying Bitcoin? And would Bitcoin be fine without Bitmain? I definitely think Bitcoin will be fine without Bitmain. It'd probably be better off because then you have less power in the hands of one entity that has acted maliciously in the past and acted against the best interests of Bitcoin. You'd probably be better off buying Bitcoin at this point and investing in the IPO or even just investing in one of their competitors that has new equipment coming to market or on the market already at a much lower, much, much lower valuation than what are they raising? They're valuing their pre-IPO was valued at 14 billion, right?
14 billion, yeah.
Yeah, I think the potential IPO was 18 or 20, something up in that range. So first of all, are they going to keep growing? I really don't know. And are there better buys? Definitely.
Although I think there are two competitors, at least in China, Yibang and KM Partners. I don't think either of their IPOs have been approved yet, right?
Not yet. But their sizes are much smaller. I think Yibang, they're raising 1 billion and Canaan is 400 million or so. But I mean, you could invest in MicroBT. They're also raising money too, right? That's the company founded by Yang Zhuoxing. And they have the M10. And it's 16 nanometer. The performance is probably going to be similar to whatever Bitmain releases at 7 nanometers. And they're, you know, I think they're looking for the A round now, I believe. So you could put money in that and you could have a nice multiple on that investment.
In reference to the Bitcoin Cash holding, I put the same question to Ari Paul, and he said that's the one thing that doesn't concern him because he said if they've got half a billion of Bitcoin Cash and that goes to zero, then maybe they should be raising 13.5 billion rather than 14. He said that's only half a billion of the total valuation. But when I was going through all the documentation, I actually listed the Bitcoin Cash situation within a section I called leadership. The bet on Bitcoin Cash, the amount of money they spent on Bitcoin Cash and the way they promoted it and had to prop it up, I think was a poor reflection on the leadership and decision making of the company, because essentially they pretty much spent, 70% of their operating profit from 2017 on acquiring Bitcoin Cash.
Mm-hmm.
Am I correct?
Yes.
So for me, it's less of a concern about the valuation, but more of a concern of the reflection on leadership.
So I agree with you. It's a big warning flag on the leadership where they're not motivated by business logic, by common sense decisions. You wouldn't sell a liquid asset to buy an illiquid asset. And I think the example I like was Charlie Lee saying, you know, you're like spending money on buying cars and treating that like an asset. That's not something a normal business person would do. This is very, I don't know, it's a religious, I don't know, they believe in it so much that they're willing to make these bad business decisions to put all their chips in one basket.
It feels to me that if you are investing in Bitcoin Cash now, you're essentially making a bet on Bitmain, because without Bitmain, Bitcoin Cash essentially has no future.
Well, they're holding the bag. They're definitely holding the biggest Bcash bag probably on the planet. And they're accepting it for payment too. I believe they're probably the only major, I don't know, merchant of any type that's taking it for payment. Like, there are hot dog stands, but you can't really compare, right? These guys are accepting Bcash as payment for miners, and they can't really offload it. So the whole value prop of Bcash is really just Bitmain will accept it and they're holding it on everyone's behalf. So I think Jihan has said in some conference or something that Bcash is the tokenization of Bitmain. And yeah, it is. If you believe in Bitmain, then you should buy Bcash.
And also, they will then be one of the largest holders in Satoshi's vision when that forks.
That's true. So I think the underlying thing that everyone has to reconcile is, are fork coins really that valuable, right? If they are, then yeah, Bitmain's really great because they've managed to accumulate a lot of something that they duplicated. But for me personally, I don't believe four coins are that valuable. Anybody can copy it. And once there's a marketplace for it, you can assign value to it, whether or not you can actually get that value or extract that value from the market is a different question. And I really don't think that being able to copy something that's supposed to be digitally scarce is valuable.
So it almost feels like if they should have done the IPO about a year ago, it would have been about the right time, a booming market, no fears, accelerated growth, no Q2, Q3 numbers to be fearful of. And also, it feels like there's a lot of risk now associated with investing in this IPO. And I know people will, but what I don't understand is how smart people, smart investors, will be investing tens and hundreds of millions into this with the amount of information that's now publicly available. Mm-hmm. Am I missing something?
No, I don't think so. There's a lot of FOMO, right? When the announcement first went out that Bitmain was going to IPO, the headlines were, this will be the biggest IPO ever, bigger than Facebook, bigger than everybody. And that drives a lot of people to throw in money and not really do their homework or wait, right? You could just wait until they file the prospectus. But I think a lot of people were trying to rush in and get in on the deal before it went off.
I would also add, so I think a lot of the figures and a lot of the data that we have, part of it is from leaked decks, right? If you actually just look at what they filed, we don't actually even get that full of a picture. So Samson, you were breaking down their like crypto holdings and all this, but that's because like you had access to these leaked confidential decks. And a normal investor, if they just look at the prospectus the application proof, like they don't break that down in there, right? And they also don't break down their like quarter earnings. So, you know, I think, you know, Peter, to your question, which is like, why IPO? Well, it's because I think if a normal investor was just going to be looking at these documents, there's a lot of details that are missing.
Right, because the H1 figures look great.
Mm-hmm. And it's not like they did anything legally wrong, right? Like, yeah, they disclosed how they calculated these, and like, yes, it's half a sentence in a 400-page document, and you know, they lumped up their, you know, semi-quarter, they made it like a semi-annual reporting instead of quarterly, and they didn't like disclose the breakdown of their holdings, but like, you know, it wasn't illegal. It's right, and they did it the right way. It's just, you know, you don't get the full picture, that's all.
But they are facing potential lawsuits, right, in Hong Kong over the Pref B and B plus rounds. I read about four misrepresentations, which I don't know if you've read this, but the CICC investor deck had net income at 1.25 billion versus the KPMG prospectus deck at 701 million. So that's a 550 million difference. They put a net profit target for 2018 of 1.8 billion, even considering their Q2 and Q3 losses, which isn't really possible. It was a skillful way they bundled the Q1 and Q2 figures together for H1, but that is misleading in that the bull kind of run continued into Q1 because people were still buying equipment on back order. You were still having a minimum order of 20 units for the S9s. And also, they've not been breaking down the inventory of cryptocurrency recordings to the true market value. I've been reading that there's a potential of lawsuits in Hong Kong based on the sale in June. Have either of you looked into that?
I've seen some things posted, but I haven't looked into it personally. So I don't really want to comment on whether it's accurate or the state of the lawsuits, but I've heard some things.
I would point out, though, you know, like, again, like, I don't actually have any background in these lawsuits, but companies trying to go public are generally aware of consequences of lying or severely misleading, or I hope they are, in public disclosure documents like this. So that's all I'm going to say.
So trying to imagine what the opportunity is for investors, therefore, outside of the crypto bull market is possibly for Bitmain to become a wider chip company outside of being just crypto mining chips. Because if they're just crypto mining chips, I see there's two problems. Firstly, three problems. It's a competitive market. They don't have a great product. Plus, I can't see this being a market that continues to grow for years and years and years just building mining chips. And, you know, the Facebook IPO was based on the fact that they could take a continually increasing share of the advertiser market and move into other products. I guess the only way for Bitmain to become a more stable business is start to develop chips outside of crypto chips. And we know the only area they're working in at the moment is AI. You've looked into that, right, Samson?
Yeah, I've done a little bit of digging. I really don't know if that's it's a nice part of their pitch and their potential value proposition. But I don't think the AI market works like that. The market for computational power for, you know, training AIs or deep learning, the researchers typically will rent or lease cloud services intensively and at high amounts when they want to do something specific, and then they shut it off. Whereas the model that Bitmain is predicting is that people will have these always on, SoFund miners that will always be crunching away, just like in a Bitcoin mining farm. And I don't think the demand model is the same at all.
Well, I mean, I brought up this point earlier, which was that, like, through reading the application proof, I really got a sense that they were, like, trying to push their, like, AI direction. And so simple example, right? So the part where they talk about AI chips was, like, put into, like, a very prominent position. In fact, they actually mentioned it even before they mentioned mining rig sales. And then, you know, there's all these sayings about, okay, you know, Bitmain's biggest advantage is being a very strong competitor in the AI chip mining industry, that, you know, they're going to continue. I mean, there's just like a lot of meat just dedicated to AI. I don't think they make that much money from it, if at all. But, you know, that was the sense that I got. I was just like, wow, there is a ton of like space dedicated to this like AI practice. I mean, I think they have engineers working on it. It's just sort of like, that was the direction that I thought they were like really trying to emphasize.
Well, AI is a buzzword right now.
It is. I think the bulk of the R&D is actually working on that rather than Bitcoin ASICs. So it goes to show they really have a big focus on it. But I don't think it's even commercial right now. I don't think they're selling anything in terms of that market.
No, but they did say, and maybe this wasn't in the proof, but I think, or I read somewhere, I think Jihan said this, but he's predicting that in the next 5 years, that 40% of their income will come through AI. Take that what you will.
And predicting in the next 3 years, the valuation of the business will be 30 to 40 billion. Is what I also read. And I guess that's the kind of expansion they'll need, but I can't see AI chips having the same rapid growth as ASICs have had, because it doesn't feel like a similar kind of market that has the same accelerated growth. I feel like the crypto accelerated growth was like a once in a generation, perhaps once in a lifetime situation. I don't imagine we will have a year like last year. We might have bullish years. And also, I think so many people have been burned from it. I think they'll be a bit more cautious next time. Like, I bought a bunch of mining rigs that got delivered in January, and I've had 2 months where I've made money. I've had five or six where I've lost and a couple of break even. I think there's a bigger threat now that people aren't going to be diving into it so much now.
Well, it's a much different market now with the saturation. I think they kind of did it to themselves. If they didn't overproduce their S9 inventory, it may have been a bit different now, but because they went all out and they created so much inventory and flooded the market, it's just shifted the whole dynamic right now. There's the difficulty is so high, right? It's getting less profitable to mine, even if your electricity costs are very low. Who's to know what would happen if they didn't do that? But I think it's definitely, it did not help themselves, and it did not help the ASIC industry in that it's become so cheap to buy an S9.
Tell me about the next generation stuff that Bitmain are doing.
Okay, so they had the worldwide, what is it, WDS or WMS, Worldwide Mining Summit or whatever it was called, out in Georgia. And they announced that they will have 7-nanometer chips. And this is at a time when it was like a day before Ebang announced their E11s. And I think it was like right between the two announcements. So the MicroBT or Shenma miner was announced the day before. And then I think Bitmain announced theirs. And then Ebang announced theirs. So there was like a sequence. I think it's possible they didn't plan to announce it, and they were forced, their hand was forced, because MicroBT announced their new M10, the WhatsMiner M10. And they had to say something. But the Bitmain announcement was very weak, because if you looked at the MicroBT announcement, they were demoing the actual miner, showing the power draw at the wall, versus Bitmain, they have a line on a PowerPoint deck saying we have 7-nanometer chips.
So do you think how much has this had to do with them losing the former director of design, Dr. Yang? Is it Zhuoxing? How do you pronounce it?
Yang Zhuoxing. Yeah, so they definitely suffered a huge loss. They've been selling the S9 for 2 years, and then their most recent S9 iteration is like a water-cooled version of the S9. So it's not exactly great. They definitely have been falling behind on the tech side and R&D side. And I don't know for what reason it is. It could be because they diverted a lot of resources to AI, or they're just not able to find someone as capable as Yang Zhuoxing. But the fact is, like, at 16-nanometer chips, MicroBT can basically compete with Bitmain's 7-nanometer. A lot of people that are not familiar with mining might think, oh, like 7-nanometer, and I think it was 42 joules per terahash. But there's like a little nuance here. You can measure the power draw of the chip itself, and that's 42 joules per terahash. But you have to look at the entire miner drawing at the wall. And if you're comparing that to the Watts miner, it's 64 joules per terahash. And that's a 16-nanometer chip, which is probably half the price. I think you can buy a 16-nanometer wafer for $7,000, and a 7-nanometer wafer would be $12,000. And each wafer would produce about 3,000, 4,000 chips. So the price is basically double to produce a 7-nanometer chip. And their gain is not double that of MicroBT. It's not two times 60, not half of 64, right? It would be like 30, it would be in the 30 range. Like, I think that's what should be expected for a 7-nanometer miner drawing 30 some odd joules per terahash at the wall. And that's nowhere close.
I guess with the slow sales of the inventory that they're already holding, they are potentially risking having quite a bit of dead inventory next year. If what you're saying is right about these other bits of equipment, Samsung, like, what is the reason to buy an S9 right now when the competitor products are so much better? Is it pricing?
You wouldn't.
Right.
Because the efficiency is not there. Like, even if they gave away for free, you'd be better off maybe still buying a miner unless you had free power, because the economics don't work out. You'd still be mining at a loss, probably. I mean, they're so cheap now, the S9s. I think they're like 20 some odd dollars per terahash at this point. It's dirt cheap.
It almost feels like Bitmain were as bullish as everybody else. All the traders who've got caught, everyone else in the market who's got caught at this top, thinking it would go on forever, not realizing the impact of the dip. Similar with their expansion into supporting Bitcoin Cash, which is obviously now pretty much a failed experiment. It's surprising sometimes to think that people would make these mistakes, but then at the same time, I guess they're only human, right?
Well, there's nothing really special about Bitmain. If you're around back in 2015, then you know that they're just another ASIC manufacturer. You know, there was KNC and Butterfly Labs. There's a whole bunch. And a lot of them folded just because they couldn't withstand the bear market. There's nothing inherently special about Bitmain. They just had lower costs and a more efficient miner, and they were able to just hang on. But if that bear market lasted a bit longer, they could have went under at that time too. They just got lucky, and they managed to, you know, slide through and survive. And they just built on top of their S7 and S9 business units and managed to become the biggest. But this stuff is cyclical. People go up and they go down. It's not like Bitmain, once they gain that dominant position, they'll be dominant forever, because as we've discussed, they do make bad decisions, and they have made a lot of really big gambles that did not pay off.
I mean, there is something to be said about the perseverance. I think this application, they said that among ASIC chip sales, mm-hmm. they own 75% of global market share. Which, you know, that's impressive.
But that's really off of the S9 and S7. Those were the best ones for the past 2 years, I would say, right? Maybe a little bit less than 2 years, but that was the most efficient miner for a long, long time.
And now they have the wrong kind of momentum going into this IPO then, because the other machines that you've noted? Is it the Watts Miner M10?
Mm-hmm.
Is it outperforming it? The EBIT machines are outperforming. And it looks like they haven't had a live running demo of the 7NM, have they?
No, they just said it's launched. And the crazy thing was they had the audacity to write in their perspectives that it was launched when they just kind of announced it. That's not launched by any definition in my book.
So do you think, Samson, that in some ways Bitmain have a lot of risk at the moment? And the traditional question, are they too big to fail or could they actually fail as a business?
Well, they've raised a lot of money for the IPO, the pre-IPO round, and I think that will keep them going. But unless they actually launch a new product and it's more competitive than eBang's, I don't think they're too big to fail. I think they're definitely, they just go poof just as easily as any of the other ASIC manufacturers back in 2014, 2015.
So I wasn't around back then. Was it a similar market conditions, like a bear market, and there just wasn't enough customers and similar situation happened?
Yeah. It's a bear market and it was not profitable to mine based on the prices at certain times. And then there's not much demand for miners. It's really linked. Like the price of Bitcoin and the demand for ASICs is linked. It's just inextricably linked together. And the price of Bitcoin, if it was higher, I think would have made a bit of a different story for Bitmain right now. And it's even more ironic because they were the ones attacking Bitcoin for a long time. And they even wrote it in their prospectus that, you know, if Bitcoin is not presented well or the market looks poorly upon Bitcoin, it'll affect them negatively. But they've been doing this attack on Bitcoin for the last 2 years.
What do you think the impact on the industry would be if there was a collapse of Bitmain?
I think immediate impact, not much from a production standpoint, because I think if anyone's buying S9s now, they're probably making a bad decision because those will be underwater soon. Like they cannot pay for themselves at the current difficulty, unless Bitmain keeps selling at a bigger loss. They're already selling them at a loss. They'd have to sell at a bigger loss. And even then, it's still not, you'd be better off buying an E11 or an M10. But in terms of production, I don't think that would be an issue. The other manufacturers can keep up and satisfy demand. There may be an issue with some of their mining farms closing down, but I think people would just buy up those assets on an auction or something. Their used machines, people would just snap those up, and if they have cheap power, they would keep running them. But overall, I don't think it would be a big impact.
I also noticed they've invested in Opera, the browser. Did you think there's anything in this? What else do you think they're trying to achieve here? Do you think there's just further diversification?
I mean, so, okay, correct me if I'm wrong, but do they, Bitmain owns 8BTC, right?
No, they are a big investor in Bitcan. Jihan founded 8BTC, I think, or was one of the founders, but he's departed from it and it's totally separate from him and his operation now.
I see. Okay. Because I was just trying to think of, like, you know, given that most of their money comes from crypto, they're trying to make an AI play, like how else that they're diversifying their income stream. But I saw the browser thing. I didn't really make much of it. What about you?
I mean, my assumption was that it was to bring crypto into the browser.
Like Brave?
Yeah.
I really don't know. It seems like kind of a random investment. I mean, if you look at the timing of the investments, I think they were flush with cash at some point and they're riding high and they're just putting money on different projects and they're not really investing with any cohesive strategy. I mean, they set up a Israeli entity to do a mining pool there, but there's like no mining in that region. So I think they're sweeping it under the rug now, but there was a mining pool that they launched, Connect BTC or for something like Connect something, but it had barely any hash rate. I think it's just gone now. But Opera, it seems like another kind of random hopeful investment to maybe prop up Bcash, but like I don't really see the connection. Maybe it's to use it to pay for, I don't know, removing ads or something, but it's a stretch, I think.
Do you think with the IPO, if it's successful, that they will be using the money to further prop up Bitcoin Cash and try and double down on their bet?
Definitely. I mean, Bcash is their tokenization of their company. So they can increase their value by propping it up. So I think they would keep on putting money in these random projects that are struggling for adoption. I mean, they're investing in like yours, which nobody's using. So they're just trying everything right now at this point.
Yours is the project by Rowan Charles. So they're putting money into anything which is a Bitcoin, which is accepting Bitcoin Cash, right?
Well, it's great for anyone trying to launch a startup as building on Bitcoin Cash, right? You'll get money from Bitmain.
This is almost a Bitcoin Cash, or as you will say, a Bcash karma playing out for them, in that they've openly attacked Bitcoin with the creation of Bitcoin Cash.
Yeah.
And that bet's not really now paid off. They are stuck holding a large bag. Mm-hmm. I can't make a decision whether this is a misleading IPO or a chaotic IPO, and I think it's probably somewhere in the middle.
Yeah, it's somewhere in the middle. I mean, Catherine, you can chime in on this too, but reading their prospectus, it's like layers upon layers of, I don't know, occlusion? They're trying to hide so many different things in this thing, but write so much about it. It's hard to like carve out the facts of what they actually did, what they have, how they're valuing things. It's just, you read it and then at the end you're still like scratching your head thinking, what exactly did they do, right? How much do they have of different things? How much inventory do they have? It's not really clear at all.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's sort of like, I thought this document was a really fantastic overview of, even like, if you think about the crypto markets, right? Like they spent time talking about, like, you know, Coinbase's accounts and how much they've grown. And, you know, for me, it's kind of like reading the history of like crypto mining almost from like 2013 onwards. Specifically about Bitmain, I agree with you. Like there are a lot of questions that I was left with. Like, for example, like I said earlier, a lot of the details were just sort of unclear. The AI thing took up like half of it, which like not, people just like didn't even know. Because I remember summarizing it and I was like, oh yeah, like they also do AI. And someone was like, what? Like, when did this come in? But it was a interesting quote of like first look at such a big company. But, you know, also going through and preparing a document like this, I mean, if you think about the legal cost and like underwriting, I mean, just all of that cost put together, an effort that would have been required to like clean up their, I don't know, financial statements and stuff. It wasn't like a haphazard, like last minute decision, right? This has obviously been planned for a while. But if you're asking me the intent, like I don't know. It's hard for me to guess that.
Well, I guess with anything, it's, they're trying to sell it, right? So they're always going to try and paint the best picture. It's a prospectus, right? It's a piece of marketing. Uh-huh. So everything has to be sold.
I don't know if this is a prospectus. I think this is just this is only like one of many steps to actually get listed. So this is just the application proof. So which means that it's currently under review by the Hong Kong Stock Exchange. Because like once you submit it, there's still like a review process, and then you actually have to go and like meet with the stock exchange, and then there's a whole marketing period where you actually go and like try and talk to like banks and try and get a sold. You know, there's a lot of steps that come before. This is just sort of the first of many.
In the US, it would be a prospectus, right? In Hong Kong, it's like a filing or something like that.
Yeah, that's why I kept saying application proof, because that's like what the term is in Hong Kong. And so, you know, there are going to be questions that the Hong Kong Stock Exchange will, or at least hope will have, right? Hopefully they'll drill down on like, all right, your crypto holdings, exactly like how does that break down? So, you know, it's a big document, but a lot of details are still very fuzzy. And who knows if they're going to ultimately get listed.
So what, they might not get listed?
They might not.
Yeah, I mean, look at eBay, right? eBay filed their prospectus or their application back in May or March or earlier this year. And
it's, same with Avalon.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's been months and we haven't heard anything yet. So, you know, Bitmain is not the first crypto mining company to file in Hong Kong. Mm-hmm. And like so far nothing's been approved, so there's a lot of uncertainty.
I know for eBay, like, and Canaan, sorry, I misspoke earlier, it's Canaan, not Avalon, but they filed a few times and they've had to do a lot of revision. So the Hong Kong Stock Exchange is not slacking on reviewing this stuff. They're very stringent in their requirements, and you do get rejected and they say file again. I think recently, like a month ago, Canaan had to refile because of some issues in their application. I actually think eBang will be the first to successfully IPO if they do get approvals. There's another layer of complexity on the Bitmain IPO, which some people may not be aware of, which is it's actually more difficult for them to IPO because of their mining operations, their actual mining farm operations and pools. It complicates their whole offering a lot more than, say, Canaan or eBang, because those guys are IPOing as purely, you know, semiconductor IC design companies and manufacturing companies, right? They have no farms, they have no pools or anything like that. It's a very straightforward offering. Bitmain's offering, having read the prospectus, it's really convoluted, confusing, and their business lines are just so complicated. And then you add in the AI, which is really out there. And then the random acquisitions. If you look at the eBang filing, it's just like, yeah, we make these mining machines. That's it. It's much more streamlined and straightforward. So the likelihood of Bitmain getting approved is actually less than the other two, I believe.
Okay, we've done pretty well here. Before we wrap up, could you both provide me with a summary of your thoughts on the IPO?
Well, so like I said earlier, like this is sort of just one of many steps. And I do agree with Samson. I'm not sure that Bitmain would be the first crypto mining company to IPO in Hong Kong. Given that there were still a lot of details to be figured out and to sort of really hash out, I think this document really illustrates it's been a really impressive like growth and journey, right? Whether it's through just pure like persevering through markets or whatever, I think Bitmain is still a very impressive company. And I think a lot of the details really only goes to show just how far the crypto, you know, industry, even from a consumer base, right? Like they were saying how their users jumped from like 6,000 to like 80,000. I mean, that's just impressive. Regardless of, I think, what happens, I personally just like found this document to be a really interesting story almost to read. And I think it'll be really interesting to see where Bitmain goes, whether they really do kind of pivot into an AI company, or, you know, maybe these seemingly random acquisitions do have a point. Like, I it's hard for me to say, but for me, it was a really interesting read.
I think the Bitmain IPO, if they get through approvals, will probably be less spectacular than a lot of people are hoping it will be. I think they'll need to refile. They'll need to provide their Q3 numbers. And we're going to see that they're nowhere near their projected profits of $1.78 billion in 2018. They've probably eaten through most of their Q1 profits by now. Q1 was definitely profitable. I think they had hoped to IPO based on Q1. But that's just not going to happen. We're going to see Q2. We saw Q2. We're going to see Q3. And it's likely we'll see Q4 before they're approved. So let's just keep on watching and seeing how it unfolds.
So full-year figures could be negative.
It's very possible.
And would you invest in it?
I definitely would not.
What about you, Catherine?
I try not to invest in anything that I don't totally understand.
I just want to ask you, Samson, how's the launch of Liquid gone?
Pretty good. We're seeing even more interest after we've launched. So we've got people reaching out to us to join the network, and we just have to get people to integrate now and expose it to their end users.
Fantastic.
A lot of work.
Great. And how can everyone stay in touch with you, Samson?
I'm on Twitter. My handle is at Excelion, Excel Lion. And I'm on Facebook too. And LinkedIn.
And Catherine, how do people stay in touch with you?
So just find me on Twitter. My handle is CatherineYKWU. Please don't find me on Facebook. I will not accept your friend request. but I am on LinkedIn under Catherine Wu. If you search Catherine Wu, since it's a pretty common name, just search Messari, which is the name of the company that I'm at, M-E-S-S-A-R-I.
Fantastic. Okay, so what did you make of that? Did you enjoy it? It's pretty interesting, right? I do recommend you check out the show notes on my website. It's worth taking a look at the prospectus. It's worth looking at the different bits of analysis that have come from different people. I think this IPO is very important, but I do think there are a number of things surrounding Bitmain that are concerning with the IPO, especially the article that came out from CoinDesk where they've potentially misled investors. But I'm very grateful to Samson and Catherine for coming on. If you have any feedback, you have any questions, you know you can always reach out to me. My email address is hello@whatbitcoindid.com. As I mentioned in the intro, I'm going to be heading up to San Francisco, I think, on Sunday. I'll be there for 2 days. Then I'll be in Vegas for World Crypto Con just to do some interviews. It's the 10th anniversary of the Bitcoin white paper from Satoshi, and it's my 40th. If you want to meet up in San Fran or Vegas, just reach out to me. Happy to meet up for a drink, have a chat. And if you want to support the show, there's always a bunch of things you can do. You can consider becoming a patron. Head over to patreon.com/whatbitcoindid. You can consider becoming a sponsor of the show. Just email me on hello@whatbitcoindid.com and we can talk about that. You can leave me a review on iTunes and you can subscribe. If you think I deserve 5 stars, that's obviously very cool. You can check out my website. That's www.whatbitcoindid.com. Lots of helpful resources on there. Different ways to navigate the podcast. I've got it by topic, by guest, and I've also got transcriptions going up. You can subscribe to my email list on my website. As I mentioned in the intro, I am now doing a daily Bitcoin email. If you've got any feedback on that, please give me a shout. And you can share this show out with your friends and family. And always feel free to reach out to me. I'm on Twitter. I'm on Medium. I'm on Instagram. My handle and everything is at whatbitcoindid. And you can email me on hello@whatbitcoindid.com. Okay, hope you have a great week. See you soon.